This podcast is brought to you by the Legarten Institute. I'm Sianne Hansen, Executive Director, and we hope you enjoy this conversation.
I'm Anne Applebaum. I'm the director of the Transitions Forum at the Legarten Institute, and I'm here with Rodri Williams, who is based in Stockholm and coordinates rule of law programs in seven countries of the Middle East and North Africa for the International Legal Assistance Consortium. Rodri's worked on a lot of rule of law issues in Libya. He was an important contributor and reader of our report, Libya, Whose Land Is It? Property Rights and Transition. And we're really pleased that he's here this evening to discuss property and politics in Libya. And I thought I would try and catch him just before we start to get some of his views, some of his background views on the subject. Rodri, you know, when we look at what's going on in Libya, we look at the civil war. It seems very confusing. It's hard to understand what's going on. But you've argued pretty clearly that some of the conflict that we see today actually has its roots in Gaddafi's earlier policies.
That's right. I think that there's a tradition which was instilled by Gaddafi of zero-sum politics, familiar to many other autocratic regimes, where the mode of rule by Gaddafi was to try to suppress any potential opposition to his regime. One of the ways of doing that was to control oil revenues and then try to suppress any other form of economic activity. And controlling property rights was an important way of suppressing economic activities in Libya, other than the exploitation of oil. Over time, this also became abused in a system of corrupt cronyism. And in many cases, property was confiscated simply in order to be able to give it to people that were connected with the regime. This led to major grievances because this not only affected individual households, but very often entire communities, with some communities that were deemed more favored by the regime given entire areas and allowed to settle there, given preferential access to public investment, infrastructure, hospitals, schools, electricity, and others denied the same things. And so the grievances and resentments that were caused by those policies are currently being played out in the civil violence that we're seeing in Libya.
One of the reasons we are so pleased to have you here is that you've worked on a lot of different countries and some very if not similar, then parallel issues about property having been confiscated by an old regime and a new, more democratic or more open liberal regime trying to find ways of restoration. Is there one that you can compare Libya to that is most interesting? Or are there examples from around the world that can be used in Libya as a way of guiding policy there?
Well, in the report I wrote about Cyprus, as a relatively comparable example. And I think the reason that Cyprus is interesting is not only because the confiscations in Cyprus happened around the same time. The Turkish invasion was in the early 70s, and Gaddafi's confiscations got underway very seriously by the late 70s, but also because the discourse in Cyprus has been similar, with victims, the main victims of those confiscations during the Turkish invasion, subsequent occupation, being Greek Cypriots, claiming full restitution, claiming the right to get everything back that they lost. And over time, a consciousness emerging that a truly sustainable solution would have to take into account the dependence of the people who had subsequently occupied the Greek Cypriots' homes on those homes. A need to take into account, in other words, the human rights of both the legal owners of the lost properties and their current occupants. The European Court of Human Rights issued a key decision about 2 years ago where they made this quite explicit. They said that it's not possible to do blanket restitution, hand everything back to owners that were dispossessed decades ago, unless there's some type of a framework for making sure that the legitimate interests of the people currently occupying their property are recognized.
And do you see any hope that in Libya some similar system can be put into place?
It's very difficult in Libya. There are particular challenges to that based on the fact that politics since the Gaddafi era, but continuing now, are viewed in zero-sum terms. This is the mistake that the Tunisians have prospered by avoiding. But in Libya, the idea that there's a winner takes all aspect to politics continues today. It means that the people who were victimized by the revolution itself never really got a hearing, never had a shot at being able to return to their homes or get some type of redress. And it means that the struggle over which of the two competing governments is most legitimate has become in itself an obstacle to arriving at some kind of a mediated solution to the conflict.
Any examples from elsewhere that might help solve the problem?
Well, I think you have to get to the point where the parties realize that they have nothing to gain by seeking, by continuing to seek to be the sole legitimate winner of the political conflict. And that, unfortunately, in many other cases, has only come through hard experience, has only come when the parties realize that they are locked in a stalemate and that the costs of remaining in that stalemate are higher than the costs of trying to climb down.
One of the suggestions in our paper at the end is almost, that the idea that the discussion of this property issue can hasten that kind of reconciliation because it really affects everybody. Everybody understands intuitively that there can't be clear winners and clear losers. Do you think that, is that wishful thinking or is that possible?
In these situations, the discourse around property claims and property disputes is always very two-edged. And that's one of the reasons that the international community always is a bit ginger in how they address or try to address these situations. On one hand, trying to resolve property claims can be quite destabilizing because you end up challenging a status quo that a lot of people will have a very, very strong interest in maintaining. On the other hand, over the longer term, resolving these types of property disputes in an equitable way is probably the only way to guarantee the sustainability of whatever reconciliation and political outcome is achieved.
Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
To hear more podcasts from the Legatum Institute, please visit our iTunes channel or website at www.li.com.